I think going forward, we may be looking at, are there some vehicles that we could use where we can circumvent a filibuster, just like in healthcare reform, we found a way to get around then. So we may try and explore that, but it's obviously critically important for the future of the labor movement, our ability to organize new members.
Do you think you do you think it can be passed?
Not now, but I'm glad the labor movement's not giving up, and I think we have to continue to press the administration and Democratic leaders on, help us find a way to get this done, mm-hmm. that it's not acceptable to do nothing. And going back on the striker replacement, just to put that in a bit of historical context, it went down to defeat in 93, and that was the same year that NAFTA was passed. And I think the combination of the two was, and then healthcare reform failed. So the combination of all three of those things, I think, is what resulted in the election debacle in 94. And a lot of people have focused on healthcare, but for our members, I think they said, we just had this administration do NAFTA to us, and this administration didn't get striker replacements passed. And then maybe they had their mixed feelings about healthcare, but I think a lot of it just led to our base just sat on its hands, and they saw no reason to go to the polls. And a lot of the writing about 94 doesn't talk about the strike of replacement, though, for our members and a lot of labor, that was very, very important.
And then what do you think about changes for the NLRB? It was notorious under the Bush administration for, you know, not reviewing cases or taking forever to review cases or putting company people on, pro-company people right. on the NLRB or non-neutrals.
And you had a whole series of terrible NLRB decisions, Brown University case. I mean, decisions that took away people's rights to have a union, effectively. And it's a good example of the difference that the elections make. So now with President Obama, you know, we've had two more pro-worker people appointed to board, and we're hoping slowly they'll start to revisit a lot of the bad Bush decisions and reverse some of them. But it's going to take a while to undo the damage that the last administration created. Mm-hmm. But we try and use that as an example often in talking to our folks about why elections make a difference, that there's a concrete thing. You also see it in a lot of the other appointments to positions in the Labor Department. You know, that having someone in the Wage and Hour Administration who's serious about enforcing Fair Labor Standards Act is another example. That's a whole other area of labor law where we've been deeply involved over the years. Under the Republicans, they would push the comp time legislation, which is a way of undermining overtime protections for workers. And fortunately, we were able to block those efforts, and they never succeeded. But separately, the Bush Labor Department changed the regulations on defining who's eligible for overtime, and basically wound up exempting millions of workers. And we tried to block that in Congress, but were not successful. Over the years, one of the issues that's come back repeatedly is efforts to increase the minimum wage, which Republicans blocked for many, many years while Bush was in power, but finally we were able to get an increase passed. And I think I've talked before about issues that keep coming back over and over again, and the minimum wage is a good example of that.
Mm-hmm. You know, speaking of administrations, much like you've worked through several administrations of the UAW. You've worked through several presidential administrations. You started when Carter was president, but that was at the UAW headquarters. But when you came here in 83, you were working with, or not working with, pointedly, but within the realm of the Reagan administration. And then, you know, you went through several administrations. I guess don't need a rundown of each, but What would you say was the most difficult to work with and the best to work with?
Well, obviously, the brief 2 years of the Clinton administration, when we had President Clinton and we had control of the House and Senate, that was the high point. And now, with President Obama, in the same situations, that's the ideal situation where you have friends controlling both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue. Obviously, the absolute worst was, when you had the second Bush president and he had Republicans in control of both. That was terrifying, because then there was always the fear that there's no ability to stop terribly bad things from happening. I mean, the only lever being filibuster in the Senate, but then the worry was always, can you keep enough Democrats together to sustain a filibuster? I must say, during all of the 80s, I mean, we had Republican presidents, and for part of the time we had the Republicans in control of the Senate, although that flipped back and forth, but we always had the Democratic House. And, the Democrats had control of the House for so long that there was this attitude that that will always be the case. And so 94 was a huge, huge shock. And to wake up with Republicans controlling Congress, including the House, and realizing that there was no ability in the House to stop anything. And we eventually were told by the Democratic staff, look, we'll make a lot of noise, but at the end of the day, you have to realize we will lose every vote in the House. That's just what happens when you're in the minority. And there's one point when I used to think about, well, my dad got to live through President Kennedy and then President Johnson, the Great Society, and Civil Rights Act and Medicare, Medicaid, all the Great Society. And then I thought, well, my legacy is all these Republican presidents and Newt Gingrich, and that's what I get to work with. But I guess it's made me sort of cherish even more now with President Obama being in, the things that have happened these first 2 years, and that even with the terrible economy and all the problems in autos, I tell our folks, we got the stimulus bill passed, cash for clunkers enacted, the S-CHIP expansion, and the comprehensive health care reform, hate crime prevention legislation, the Lilly Ledbetter law. I mean, it's a pretty impressive list of things that are the law of the land, and I guess I have more perspective knowing how difficult it is to some of these things that were worked on for healthcare. We've talked about hate crimes prevention legislation, I think was an 8-year battle. Lilly Ledbetter took years and years too. It just makes you realize how special it is, and that, I mean, our founding fathers set up the whole system of government because they distrusted government, so they made it difficult to get things enacted into law. And I remember a similar feeling, after the 12 years of Republican presidents with Reagan and then the first Bush, we finally get President Clinton, and very early, I think within the first 6 months, we had family and medical leave finally got enacted, a motor voter, and I think the Hatch Act reform. But I remember being in the Rose Garden for the signing of the family and medical leave, and a lot of the lobbyists who worked on it saying, my God, I can't, but this is what it feels like to actually make it to the finish line. So I now cherish these moments more.
If you, what would be the one piece of advice, I'm sure you could give plenty of advice to me if I was coming in behind you to take your job and I was fresh and I was going to start to work with Congress, what would be the one axiom that you might give me, if there is such a thing as just one or two, we can go to.
I, I guess one of the hardest things in being a lobbyist is realizing that people who may be your friends or your enemies on a particular issue next week or the next year, there's going to be another issue and things may be different. So just because someone votes against you on one thing, you got to think about, you may have to go back to that same person in the near future to ask them on for their vote on something else. And so it's a fine line to walk on being strong in what you're advocating for and communicating the passion and the importance. I mean, you don't want to be, oh, we don't really care how you vote. We do care very much. But to do that in a way that's respectful and thoughtful and that preserves the ability to go back again on the next issue, even if mm-hmm. someone hasn't been with you. And I told the story about Jim Cooper, again, a conservative member of Congress who we had very difficult battles with, and he wasn't with us in mm-hmm. in when the health care reform went down under Clinton. And yet I was able to go back to him and have conversations and get his vote in 2010. So I think that's a thing effective lobbyists, I mean, the easiest thing in the world is for a lobbyist to just always be critical and, you know, here's our position and we're against everyone else and anything they're doing is a sellout and not good enough and we're not for it. And there are some unions that where they sort of take that position, and I often think, well, they do that so no one can ever criticize them for having done a compromise to get something accomplished. But when you do that, then you're always outside the legislative process. You're always not satisfied, and you're always just attacking folks. And I guess at the end of the day, I've always viewed this as we're about trying to get things actually accomplished, and it may be half a loaf, but we'll take the half a loaf now and come back later. And I guess that's a lesson my uncle and my father taught me about on the collective bargaining side of, you know, you never get everything you ask for in bargaining, but you get it sort of brick by brick. And in that sense, I think the legislative situation's similar. And being able to preserve your effectiveness of you win some, you lose some, you get compromises on a lot of things, and still come back to fight on the next battle.
Okay. I was going to ask you a question. What do you think was your greatest achievement? You've answered that. What was your biggest disappointment? You've answered that as well. Is there anything else you'd like to add to the narrative we have so far? Anything, any questions? I